Welcome to Radio Times. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan. Marty's got the day off today. Safe to say, even the thought of bed bugs can produce a visceral reaction of horror. Bed bugs can produce red, swollen, itchy bites. Psychologically, it's almost impossible to sleep knowing they're around, and they can be extremely difficult to get rid of once there's an infestation. Bed bugs are a modern-day reality, having bounced back after a near eradication during the age of DDT, and they are an especial plague in cities and towns in which homes and high-rises and row houses are closely knit together. Philadelphia recently won the dubious distinction of being the most bed bug infested city in the country, according to a study done by Terminix. So how do these creatures operate? What is the best way to prevent infestation? And how do we get rid of them, especially if money is tight? Phones are open for your questions and comments. Here's the number, 888-477-9499. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times or send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. Joining us this hour, Philadelphia City Councilman Mark Squilla has been leading the charge in recent years in efforts to win relief and protection for city residents affected by bedbugs. Mark Squilla, good to have you with us. Do we have Councilman Squilla? Okay, we'll try to reestablish that connection. Michael Levy is in studio with us. He is Associate Professor of Epidemiology at the University of Pennsylvania. Hi, Councilman Squilla. How are you?
Hi, how are you? Sorry, I don't know if I was on mute or not, but I am here.
Well, good to have you with us. As I was saying, also, Michael Levy, Associate Professor of Epidemiology at the University of Pennsylvania. Nice to have you with us as well.
Thank you for having me.
And Brooke Burrell is author of Infested, How the Bedbug Infiltrated Our Bedrooms and Took Over the World. Hello, Brooke. That is indeed a frightening title.
It is. I'm sorry about that.
Brooke Burrell, well, first of you, tell us how bedbugs operate. What is it about us as humans that attracts them?
Well, bedbugs are one of many, maybe around 100 species that live off all kinds of different animals. The particular one that you're talking about that's in Philadelphia quite a bit and in other cities all over the world is the common bedbug. And they have evolved to feed on one thing, and that's blood, and that's our blood. So they have been following us around for a very long time and live typically around our beds, hence the name, but they can live other places as well and come out and feed on us when we're sleeping. It's a very lazy way to eat and then go back and rest while we're up and moving around and then come back again when we're sleeping again or otherwise staying in one place for a long time.
So when we're sleeping, what attracts them to us? What is it we're doing?
The heat from our body, the CO2 coming from our breath, possibly some other chemicals that our skin's giving off, although I'm not sure if there's research on that. I know that mosquitoes and other insects are also attracted to other chemicals on our skin, so bedbugs might be as well.
You say most people don't feel a bedbug when they bite, and the way they fill up is kind of like attaching a balloon to a spigot?
Some people do and some people don't, but a lot of people don't feel actually when the bite's actually happening. Which is a good tactic if they're trying not to wake us up.
Mark Squilla, you are open about the fact that you had to deal with them at one point in your South Philly home. What happened?
Yes, we believe we would trip over to Europe, and then when we came back, maybe a week or so afterwards, we started experiencing some bites. And like was said earlier, not everybody had the same reaction to them. My son had a very allergic reaction to them. It would blow up. We went haywire for about a month, getting exterminators in, trying to re-encapsulate on mattresses, making sure we spoke to some professionals to see what we should and shouldn't do, letting the neighbors know that, you know, we did have bed bugs in case, you know, there was an infestation. Now, in our case, it wasn't as bad as an infestation, but it was enough to really wreak havoc throughout the house, and not only emotionally, but also making people not able to sleep. So physically, it had a big effect on the household.
Well, we had a minor scare ourselves many years ago in our family, and I just remember it turned out to be nothing, but trying to sleep thinking there might be bed bugs in the vicinity is nearly impossible.
Yes. Mental health-wise, it is a major, major effect.
Yeah. Michael Levy, in your research, you've gone door-to-door talking to Philadelphians. What are you hearing from them?
I've heard that a lot of Philadelphians have bed bugs. We had about 11% of people we spoke to in South Philly tell us that they'd had bed bugs, and that was a number of years ago. And then outside of my research, among my friends and colleagues at the University of Pennsylvania, a lot of people are dealing with this issue.
Yeah. So they can come from foreign places, but they can also be as close as your next-door neighbor, especially if you share a wall, Michael?
They're all over the city. And how they get around is a little bit of a mystery. They show up in public places every year in September. There's one on a SEPTA bus, and a video goes viral almost like clockwork. But I think they're really moving in part through this when you have rental units and it becomes infested, and people move out, and they often bring the bed bugs with them to a new unit. And they also leave them behind. So you go from one infestation to two, and of course also through the trade in used beds and mattresses.
Mm. So yeah, definitely one of the don'ts, and we'll talk about don'ts later on, but don't pick up that mattress and try to salvage it that you might see, you know, sitting on the sidewalk.
No, absolutely.
So Brooke Burrell, they are hitchhikers, and so since they are hitchhikers, tell us what they look like. Describe them for the radio if you could.
Oh, gosh. Despite what people think, bed bugs are visible to the eye. They aren't invisible. The little ones, the youngest ones, are quite small and kind of harder to see, but they're still visible to the eye. The adults are usually described as around the size of a lentil or an apple seed. The apple seed shape is more when they're full of blood, and then they're more flat and round like a lentil when they haven't been fed. Like any insect, they have six legs. They have kind of segmented bodies. Some entomologist I have interviewed in the past describe them as kind of cute as far as bugs go. I'll let you listeners decide whether you agree with that or not.
From an entomologist point of view.
Yes. Pretty much it.
But they're not crawling around generally in broad daylight.
Not usually. I mean, if it's a really bad infestation, you might see some of them crawling around, but they typically are on sort of an opposite schedule as us if we are, in fact, you know, sleeping at night. If someone has as a worker at night and is sleeping during the day, the bed bugs will shift their schedule to whatever their food source is doing as well.
How do you know if you have an infestation? What are some of the telltale signs, Brooke?
It depends. It depends. So I've also had bed bugs three times, and I have really horrible reactions to them. So I, in my cases, knew very immediately that I had something going on. So some people will start getting bites that they start noticing at night. Often it will be on parts of the body that are exposed at night because bed bugs are crawling out from their hiding place and then finding wherever the skin that you have bare skin, taking a bite and going back. Sometimes they kind of appear as bites in a line. Probably because they're sort of crawling along the bed and just biting along wherever the skin is meeting the bed where you're lying down. But if you don't react to bed bugs, you might notice some other hints. One, they sometimes will have a little bit of an odor. Some people have described it as kind of a sweet odor. They don't really smell that way to me. But if you have a really massive infestation, you may smell some sort of musty or sweet odor. You often will see them sort of leaving little flecks of dark, looks like almost mold or pepper along maybe the edges of the mattress or wherever they're hiding out. And this is their poop, basically. They're pooping out little pieces of very dark blood poop. So that's what that is.
It's gross.
Sorry.
It's absolutely gross.
Yeah, it's gross. But
we do need to talk about it.
Yep. Yeah. And it's early, but we got to talk about it.
Michael Lovey, what are the health consequences of bed bugs?
Well, there are the direct ones, which you mentioned, the allergy, the sleepless nights. There's indirect consequences, especially individuals. People who need home care sometimes can't get home care, can't get nurses to come to their house due to infestations.
They're afraid, and with reason, because, again, they're hitchhikers, bed bugs, correct?
Or
is that an overreaction?
I think that's I've been in a lot of infested houses, and I've never gotten them on my clothes. And that's not to say that it doesn't happen, but I think if they're hitchhikers, they're mainly hitchhiking on stuff, on mattresses, on beds, on bags.
Don't put your stuff on the bed.
I think a lot of healthcare workers are now trained of, you know, what to do to make sure that they're not bringing them home with them, which is, you know, don't bring all your stuff in and put it on the couch or the bed. But I also want to say there's also the potential health effects. These, whenever you have a bug that's biting a person and then biting another person, potentially even biting animals, you have these cycles that pathogens can take advantage of. And these bugs can transmit a number of very nasty diseases, including Chagas disease, trench fever, relapsing fever. These are dangerous organisms, and we need to...
Is that true, though? I thought we didn't know that bed bugs spread disease for sure.
They can spread it. So they're in the lab, you can very easily spread Chagas disease from an animal to another animal through bed bugs.
But are there cases that we know of in humans? I just don't want to scare people.
I'm sure I'll get a lot of calls. I definitely don't want to scare anyone. Yeah. We haven't seen them spreading it. We don't know if they will spread it. But if they do, we're not ready to stop it.
But the potential is there.
The potential is there, and it's very similar to the tiger mosquito we now have all over Philadelphia. It can spread chikungunya. It can spread Zika. It's not spreading it right now in Philadelphia. But we need to be ready in case they do prove to be vectors.
Councilman Squilla, go ahead.
Yes, I mean, it's a challenge to the folks who have bed bugs. And most of our calls actually come from, I know they said renters and stuff, but most of our calls that we get in our office come from regular row home folks who have infestations on their block. And one of the property owners is not able to get their house cleaned up or exterminated. And therefore, they've spent a lot of resources clearing up their property, doing what they need to do. And then 6 months later, they end up getting the bed bugs again. Because they are able to travel through the walls and be able to get from one property to the next. And I think our goal is to try to get the city to put a policy in place so that people know when they are faced with bed bugs, that bed bugs do have a policy in the city. The city can help you then direct you in the proper place to get these things done. And just say, you know what, this is not a city issue. It's on you. Hire an exterminator. Not everybody has the resources to do that. And I think it's up to the city to make sure we put something in place to dictate what needs to happen. So therefore, we could start to help eradicate this. I know when people first thought of bed bugs years ago, you thought, oh, they're only in a hotel or something. And, you know, the hotels have wherewithal and they have resources to deal with it. A lot of our residents don't. And you'll see them in a lot of our public housing. We'll have that. And then we'll also have them in regular row homes. And we have them in apartments, too. But it's really widespread throughout the whole housing market. And I think that our city and our health commissioner took the same sort of position that, you know, it doesn't spread any health concerns, so therefore it's not a health issue. We don't want to enforce them, and we don't want to have to be able to come up with a way to manage this situation in the city of Philadelphia, and so, I totally disagree.
So it's low on the list of pressing matters, you're saying, Councilman Squilla. We'll pick up that thread in just a moment. We're up against a break here. We're talking to Mark Squilla, Philadelphia City Councilman for the city's 1st District. Michael Levy is Associate Professor of Epidemiology at the University of Pennsylvania. And Brooke Burrell is author of Infested, How the Bed Bug Infiltrated Our Bedrooms and Took Over the World. We're going to take your calls and comments as well coming up here after the break. You are listening to Radio Times on WHYY in Philadelphia. Stay tuned. You are listening to Radio Times on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan. Marty Moskowane has the day off. We are talking about bed bugs this hour, why they are on the rise, the dangers they might pose, the mental havoc they wreak, and how to protect yourself from them. Our guests are Brooke Burrell, author of Infested, How the Bed Bug Infiltrated Our Bedrooms and Took Over the World. Michael Levy is Associate Professor of Epidemiology at the University of Pennsylvania's Perelman School of Medicine. And Mark Squilla is Philadelphia City Councilman for the city's 1st District. So, Mark Squilla, to be clear, if a renter in Philadelphia finds bed bugs in his or her home, who is responsible for the extermination? What part does the landlord play?
Well, I mean, right now, there's no policy whatsoever through the city of Philadelphia. And so a good landlord, people who do their job professionally, will go in and take care of the matter and work it out with the tenant. A bad landlord, unfortunately, doesn't do anything and therefore allows this condition to spread through other units and then to other buildings that are close by. And that's part of the problem.
Michael Levy, so in your research, you recommend something called a disclosure policy. What is that?
That's basically that if you have an infested unit, as a landlord, you have to tell a potential tenant that it has had an infestation.
And so, of course, this will protect the potential tenant. Can it permanently, on the other side, stigmatize a rental even after it's been treated and therefore cost the landlord?
So it's there's a time limit. I think Councilman Squillett's bill has a one-year time limit. The cost to the landlord, there's an immediate cost if they can't rent that unit. But in the long term, it's going to save them money. And I think if you're a landlord, you should be for this bill because it's going to make sure that other landlords are treating their units, and that will stop their tenants from leaving those infested units and moving into your property.
Mark Squilla, so again, you've introduced a bill that would crack down on landlords who don't address bed bugs proactively. What are the proposed penalties?
Well, what we're looking at, and our bill still is looking to have a hearing in the fall. So, you know, we're willing to talk with landlords and other property owners to come up with a best practice. But our goal is that, you know, we as a city need to put a policy in place, and therefore the onus has on somebody to be something. And if we say, if you move into the apartment and within, you know, a month you have bed bugs all over the place, the purpose of the bill is to say that the landlord has to go in immediately and remediate the property of the situation. If the bed bugs come, say, 2 years down the road, then we're off for discussions to say, how is that done? We still believe the landlord is responsible for the extermination, but maybe there's a shared fee that they're allowed to add a $10 a month charge onto the rent when they come through this or something. That is not part of the current bill, but I'm open to suggestions to see how we try to mitigate this. The only problem is we fear that if there is some type of detriment to the tenant, especially in a lot of the low-income areas, these tenants will never report it.
Yeah.
So if they don't report the bed bug incident, we do not get a jump on it to try to get it before the infestation gets real bad.
We're going to get to some.
Our goal is to have more people report it.
Thank you, Mark. We're going to get to some of our calls and comments in just a moment. But Brooke Burrell, this is not just Philadelphia. This is a city, a problem that affects cities more than it does rural areas. Correct?
Yeah, absolutely, and worldwide. Cities, mostly because we live in, you know, more cramped spaces. We live in apartments versus standalone houses for the most part, and it provides a situation where the bed bugs can travel from one family to the next pretty easily.
Yeah. Let's quickly look at the hotel industry. Say you find something, Brooke, in a place, you're at a nice hotel. Do you need to leave the hotel entirely? Is an outbreak in one room indicative of bed bugs elsewhere in the building? How do we handle that?
Not necessarily. I actually one time got bed bugs in a hotel room, too, in Chicago. And I woke up early in the morning and had bites, and we called the front desk, and they sent someone up, and they put us in a different room and paid for our laundry and these kinds of things. You know, I think that just going to any hotel in general, there are some precautions you can take. You can, for one, in a hotel room, the bed bugs are probably more likely going to be around the bed because that's where people are going to be at rest. Versus at home, you might find them around the couch if people are sleeping on the couch or that kind of thing. So searching around the sort of edges of the mattress, searching around the bed skirt, which is where they were at the time I was in a hotel and found them, maybe around the bed frame, that kind of thing. Not putting your luggage on the bed. I know some people that actually keep all of their luggage in the bathroom because that's one of the more least likely places for the bed bugs.
Makes sense.
And, you know, when you go home, do laundry. Bed bugs, one thing that does kill them is really high temperatures. So if you wash and, you know, do your laundry and dry at a pretty high temperature for, you know, 20 minutes or something like this, it should be enough. And again, they are visible to the human eye. So kind of all those things together, inspecting your stuff, keeping your stuff away from the bed, looking at the bed, it should be fine.
Yeah. Mark Squilla, so what is the reaction to your bill from the hotel industry in Philadelphia?
Well, the hotel industry is really not as concerned with it because, like I said, they do the proper protocols. You know, the worst thing for them is to have somebody in Yelp say, you know, we went to this hotel and they had bed bugs. One thing people are used to doing when they go and they pay a pretty good sum of money to stay somewhere and they don't get the proper housing, they are going to report it. And that industry, I think, has been pretty much taken care of because they do have the resources to try to fix it. But I think our biggest issue is with our public housing, our rental units, our even individual row homes throughout the city. You know, I would like to be more proactive as a city. I mean, there's other municipalities that are doing some tests in some of their own public housing where they're trying to be preemptive of it instead of reacting to every situation. How do you help prevent bed bugs from getting into a unit? And if they do get into a unit, what is the best way to be notified right away? And then what is the best way to eradicate it so therefore it doesn't spread? And that's where we have to get to. But we have to have a policy in place before we could even get there so that the city does have take some responsibility in how to monitor not only the bed bug explosion. Philadelphia being the number one infested bed bug city in the country does not bode well for us. And I know everybody thinks automatically that's the hotels, but it's not. It's mostly our living quarters.
And again, of course, it can cause enormous suffering, especially if you are living at the poverty line, you don't have the funds to get rid of them. Brooke?
Yeah, I actually was just going to add, I think that bed bugs are often unfairly sort of associated with people who don't have money and this sort of thing. The truth is, though, that bed bugs are really expensive to get rid of and also can be very physically demanding to get rid of. So the most vulnerable populations definitely are people who don't have extra money to spend on this, people who are perhaps disabled or otherwise have limited mobility, the elderly, this kind of thing. So I think that that's a huge problem across the country in any city.
And it has nothing to do... It can have nothing to do with how, quote unquote, a clean a person you are.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Michael Levy, you are nodding your head.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. Anyone can get them. And like Brooke was mentioning, not anyone can get rid of them because it can cost about $1,200 in Philadelphia for good extermination services. So even though it didn't start as an issue that was associated with wealth, it's become one.
We have tons of... Well, oh, go ahead, Mark.
I'm sorry, this is Councilor Squill. I was just saying, sure. One thing we were talking about adding is that in our legislation, it doesn't say this, but through conversation, I was thinking that, you know, there could be a fund set up through the city for people who are having struggling socioeconomically and therefore maybe are eligible for LIHEAP or some of our other programs. If we put on like a dollar fee per mattress support or something in the city of Philadelphia where we could then generate some income, therefore have a bank of dollars available for people who would be eligible for extermination, we could then help as a city instead of just throwing our hands up and said that's not our problem.
You've got to generate the interest first, right?
That's a great idea, yeah.
But the more proactive we are, the more we're going to save long term.
To the calls, to the comments, we've got a tweet from Rob who says, many people suffering from bed bugs don't report in surveys they are suffering. Partly the taboo, partly a percentage of humans don't have a reaction to a bite. I only learned I had them after feeling them crawling around me. Rude awakening. So, Michael, you know, again, you're going door to door in some sections of Philly. Are people always, do you think, truthful about it? I mean, there is a stigma around, again, we've talked about the stigma around having bed bugs.
Absolutely. There's underreporting due to stigma or just not knowing you have them. And then there's overreporting due to other insects that look a little bit like bed bugs. It's very hard to get an accurate number of how bad it is in Philadelphia.
Question from caller, wondering if the guests could speak to the similarities between bed bugs and bat bugs. This usually affects people in rural area, and whether the treatment for bat bugs is the same for bed bugs. Brooke Burrell, in your research, did you come across bat bugs?
Yes, there are bat bugs, there are swallow bugs, there are chicken bugs, there are all kinds of bugs. Maybe not chicken bugs, maybe I made that one up. And poultry bugs, I don't remember. Anyway, yes, bat bugs are a thing. They look very similar to bed bugs. They will be living usually, I would maybe need a fact check on this, but usually I think up in the attic or other places where bats might be roosting. And I'm not sure about the treatment. There might be some different treatments involved with that, or at least where you would be placing perhaps some of the materials, like some of the pesticides or the diatomaceous earth, which is this crushed up dust that you can put around and the bugs can crawl through and it can sort of desiccate them. It might be just different tactics on where that stuff is located. There might be other treatments I'm not aware of, though.
Marty Overlin is a president of the Pennsylvania Pest Association and joins us now live for Radio Times. Thanks so much for calling in.
How are you?
I'm fine.
You,
So, hey, Marty, how you doing?
So obviously you've been following the conversation, Marty. What are your thoughts or your comments?
My thoughts have been going on for 40 years now, killing bed bugs, so I have a lot of thoughts. But my main concern with the city, Bill, is I still really feel like disposal of infested items is an issue. It's very difficult for us as a pest industry to, most of the time we have a lot of clutter issues in these homes, and getting rid of the person's belongings. They want their house decluttered, and it's very hard for us just to, we can't just put it at the curb. There needs to be something in place where a lot of this stuff can, maybe a dedicated trash truck, or maybe open up the dumps to some of the pest control companies so we can dispose of. So sometimes it's a lifetime of stuff from a person's house.
So
it can get very, very difficult with disposal.
So if you have a lot of clutter, then that's an invitation to an infestation.
It's more places for them to hide, really, and it's just harder to treat because there's more things that you have to sort of worry about to treat.
Hmm. So Marty, what do you recommend for people who have an infestation but who really can't afford the treatment? Again, is this something that we need to go to local government and I think, as Councilman Squilla had suggested earlier, perhaps come up with a fund to help support these folks?
Councilman Squilla has been at the forefront of this issue since it turned around a dozen years ago. So absolutely, we need to have some type of some aid in place to help senior citizens and people that can't afford it. A lot of my weekends are spent helping people, and it gets very difficult with some of the senior citizens because, like I said, they have a lifetime of stuff in their house. Somehow they get infested. It's usually through, at this point in their lives, a health aide will come into the house. And unfortunately, there's a lot of health companies that have multiple employees that come into these people's homes, and they bring the bed bugs in. Mm-hmm. It's not the senior citizen, but bed bugs are brought into their home by the health aide. And usually it starts out in the couch or the chair that the health aide sits in, and it'll spread from there. And if there is a lot of clutter around the house, sure, it's what makes it 10 times more difficult to eradicate them.
All right, Marty, thanks so much for calling into Radio Times. We appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Well, again, they can hitchhike sometimes. I mean, they can come into the house in various ways. Let's take a look at some treatments that and prevention methods that we can kind of institute in the home. We've got a call from Peter who says, my son got bed bugs from school about a dozen years ago, and it was a huge effort to remove them. I heard you can spray a mixture of 50% water and 50% Clorox, and that will bring them out from hiding. Is that true? Brooke, you want to take a crack at that?
Well, I would guess probably not. I haven't seen any scientific papers on that mix exactly, but there are all kinds of, claims for all kinds of different mixtures that claim that you can pull them out or kill them with sort of, essential oils and all kinds of stuff like that. And I don't think there's much truth to it, unfortunately.
Well, we were talking about heat earlier. We know that baking bed bugs in a dryer will kill them. But some people are superheating entire apartments. How does that work, Brooke?
So in some cases, this is actually a device that is meant to do this, that certain pest control operators will use. It's a big heater that they can heat up an entire house with. And it does seem to work. It's very expensive. We have seen cases, though, where people have not wanted to pay for that and tried to do this on their own with, say, a space heater or something like this. And this is when you hear in the news of a house, catching on fire because of a bed bug treatment. This is often the result of that. So please don't do that at home.
Yeah. Are we hearing of any of that in Philadelphia, Mark Squilla?
Oh, yeah, we've heard that. There's, some exterminators that can do it properly and heat up an area, a room, or a small unit. But, to try to do some of these things on your own is very difficult. Now, there are some, methods that some pilots are being done in Baltimore and others to try to, once you do remediate it, to try to put some things in place so that, that diatomaceous earth and some other things to try to see that prevent it from happening again or getting these bugs into the people's beds can help prevent it moving forward. But it's all about education and getting people into a position where they know what to do once they see them. And instead of trying to hide it, let's bring it out there. I remember when I first told it on KYW radio, I said, oh, yeah, that I had bed bugs. And that was the impetus of me trying to introduce legislation. And my wife wanted to kill me. Like, oh, my God, you're talking about real bed bugs, you know? And I said, yeah, we need to tell people so they know that it could happen to anybody.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Well, Michael Levy, again, you talk to people throughout Philadelphia. People tell you their stories. What do you think needs to happen in terms of policy to further education, to prevent the spread, to help with infestation, to help to erase stigma, and especially to help the homebound?
Well, I'd agree. If the city can have a much more proactive reaction, I don't think we can do this on our own. I don't think we can expect individual households to solve this problem on our own. I don't think education alone is going to solve the problem. I do think, and I should have said this earlier about disclosure, we can't also imagine that exterminators are going to be able to come in, spray something, and solve the problem. This is something that the person living in the house has to really be aware of and to be helping the exterminator to control the problem, and it can take a year. The bed bugs you can have them one summer. They seem to go away in the winter, and then May, June, July, August, they come back.
Really?
So it's a
long
term.
Terrible. So why would they come back if you think you've gotten rid of them? Are there still just a couple hiding around the house, and that's all that it takes?
Exactly. And their populations are just seasonal, and they fluctuate. And so I've seen it, and often exterminators will give you a 3-month warranty. That's not enough. You really need to make sure they don't come back the next summer. And if you have someone moving into the unit, they need to be aware so that they can be actively checking and, you know, change your sheets and check the mattress every time.
I think it's worth adding, too, that an infestation can start with just a single female that's been mated because the bed bugs, for whatever reason, they can inbreed. So, and it doesn't mess up their population. So if you just miss one pregnant female, then you could have a big problem still.
So be on guard. It's a team effort. And we'll have more here after the break. I know we have to let you go. Mark Squilla, Philadelphia City Councilman for the city's 1st District. Keep us posted on your efforts to work with the city to address this problem.
Mary, thank you so much for having us. Thank you for bringing up the topic, and then let's keep talking about it until the city of Philadelphia does something to help remove that number one bed bug.
Thanks.
In the country.
Thanks, Mark. We got to go. Thanks. Stay with us, everybody. Welcome back to Radio Times. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan. Our focus this hour has been bed bugs prevention and treatment and erasing the stigma. Brooke Burrell is author of Infested, How the Bedbug Infiltrated Our Bedrooms and Took Over the World. And we've got Michael Levy with us for the remainder of the hour as well. He is Associate Professor of Epidemiology at the University of Pennsylvania's Perelman School of Medicine. And before we get to chemical alternatives to DDT, I first would like to get into home treatments a little bit more, or home prevention. Brooke, lots of vacuuming. If you could tell us if there are treatments which are pet and child safe, or with bed bugs, do you have to just go with a scorched earth treatment to really get rid of them?
I think it depends. I mean, as far as I'll address the preventative stuff first, like, yes, vacuuming regularly, making sure you're doing laundry regularly, washing your sheets regularly. These, again, bed bugs don't necessarily relate to someone who is dirty. People who are clean can also get them. But those kinds of practices can certainly help get rid of them or prevent them. If you only have maybe one caught in your sheets and then you put it in the dryer, it's going to die. Other things, just doing regular checks, being careful when you go to hotels, like I mentioned before, earlier in the show, that kind of stuff. As far as treatments go, unless there have been big changes since my book came out several years ago, most of the over-the-counter treatments really don't work.
Really?
And I don't necessarily think that that's the best way to go. It's probably better to talk to a professional and try and figure out a treatment from there. And then from when you bring an exterminator into the house, they might have different tactics that they would use. There's no one single tactic, though, that's going to work on its own. It's going to be a combination of doing the laundry on high temperatures, cleaning, getting rid of clutter, doing perhaps a pesticide or perhaps some other treatment, depending on what you can afford and what the exterminator recommends and that kind of thing.
Michael?
Right. We call it integrated pest management. It's partially a lot of laundering. It's a lot of finding where they are and dealing with each little spot where they are. And like I said, it takes a long time, and you have to keep doing it. And, I I'll echo the warning about buying things over the counter and spraying them. Some of these things
so
can be
dangerous.
So
what is wrong with that? I mean, with those products?
They just won't work.
They just don't work?
Just doesn't
like
work.
Spray on contact, and but you really don't see bed bugs anyway during the day?
If you see the bed bug, you might as well just squash it. That'll be more effective than spraying any of those on contact. I mean, they also, so part of, and this goes into the DDT thing as well, part of the reason they're hard to kill with pesticides is that they're in hiding most of the time, and they're going to have to walk through the pesticide in order to pick it up. So if you're using some over-the-counter thing with cedar oil or whatever it is that they're advertising, it's not actually usually going to touch the bed bug unless you're spraying it directly on it, and it probably isn't going to kill it even if you do that. DDT worked really well in the past, and you know there are all kinds of problems with DDT, but it left it stayed on the surface of things. It left a layer sort of on the surface of things for a very long time, which is partly why it had so many environmental problems. But it stayed there long enough for bed bugs to walk through it, and then it was also very toxic to them.
And I'll just add, some of these things, even though they're natural oils, can be dangerous. You know, make sure you're reading the label. Even diatomaceous earth, you know, that's not something you want to spread around your floor.
Yeah, you don't really want to breathe it in. It probably is going to irritate the lungs, for example.
And I've been in houses here in Philadelphia that look like snow globes. There's so much of this diatomaceous earth.
Yeah, and the bed bugs probably aren't going to be able to walk over those mountains of diatomaceous earth anyway, right? But I understand people's, you know, want to use a lot of it.
Well, so DDT for many years did the trick for the most part, but it was also obviously harmful to wildlife and humans. Why hasn't the chemical industry developed an alternative?
Well, it's incredibly difficult and expensive to find something that works that's also safe. Right now, I would have to maybe double-check this as well, but to my knowledge right now, the only pesticide that you can use in the bedroom that would work is a family called pyrethroids. And bed bugs are often getting very resistant to this particular kind of pesticide. But it costs millions, billions, I can't remember the figure, a huge amount of money for companies to find that chemical that is going to work, that's also going to be safe and effective.
Yeah. Go ahead, Michael.
I think there's things coming. You know, I think a lot of people, I don't know if it's companies, universities are working on new methods, and some of them are promising. I don't want to say anything on air because then, you know, very quickly they become not promising. But I think what we need to worry about is repeating what happened with DDT. DDT was extremely effective, but then we lost our... We stopped paying attention to bed bugs and they came back. So when we get the next thing, we need to make sure that we don't use it on its own, because that's the number one way to get resistance. We need to keep using it in this integrated pest management way with other things.
So, in fact, bed bugs, some pockets of bed bugs were becoming resistant to DDT.
Very early.
Absolutely. I mean, this is going to happen with any material that you're using if you're only using that. It's the same. It's analogous to what's happening with antibiotics and superbugs right now.
Brooke, you tell the story of an entomologist named Harold Harland who found some bed bugs in a barracks at Fort Dix back in the 1970s. And at the time, bed bugs were pretty rare. So he decides to keep a few hundred. And when you interviewed him, he had with him at least one container with bed
multiple containers
with bed bugs in them, with netting on the top so they could be fed.
Yes.
You know, what was the object there, and how did that go?
Well, I mean, I think that his inclination to take them from this barracks in the past, so he was called in. He was an army entomologist, if I'm remembering correctly, and it was his job to go into this barracks and find out what was biting the people inside at night, and he figured it out, and it was also his job to sort of organize getting rid of them, but he had never seen a bed bug in person before and found them very interesting, and so he took some home and put them in these, you know, mason jars. And at the time, his methods have changed over time because that was a long time ago, but he took some pantyhose, old pantyhose, and stretched that across the top of the jar so the bed bugs could eat, because in order to keep them alive, he was going to have to feed them blood because that's what they eat. And so he fed them just by pressing his arm or leg against that stretch of pantyhose. And interestingly, I mean, he's done this for years. He's had them for decades. And because his bugs have been so protected from pesticides for that entire time, they are very vulnerable to pesticides. And they are actually often used in studies that are trying to understand just how bad pesticide resistance to the pyrethroids, how bad that's happened right now.
And what are we trying to get from these studies again? to learn about things, chemicals, compounds that might be able to use to treat them?
Exactly.
Maybe, I mean, yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, you know, I had some of Dr. Harlan's bugs I inherited.
Oh, you did? How interesting.
They're popular.
You have to be careful if you read a scientific study about a chemical that kills bed bugs, because they could be killing Dr. Harlan's bed bugs.
People will be sneaky like that.
All right, let's get to traveling. We talked a little bit about how they can come home, in luggage. They can come from other places. What are the odds, truly, though, of picking up bed bugs on any one trip, Michael?
Low.
Really?
I think one trip. Low. I often we talk about hitchhiking. I have a test I call the jury duty room test. You know, the jury duty room here in Philadelphia, there's about 500 seats, the plush seats, and every day 500 Philadelphians from all over the city come in, and I know that 10 or 20 or 30 of them have bed bugs at home, and as far as I know, that room has never been infested. So,
That's really interesting. They
do hitchhike, but again, and every year, like I said, one SEPTA bus gets on the news, but how many SEPTA buses are there in the city? How many people are riding them every day? It's rare. I worry a lot more about stuff moving. And when Marty Overline mentioned healthcare aides, they're coming with stuff.
Right.
And often it's beds. I've seen medical beds that are being moved from room to room, house to house.
So they're hitchhiking, but just on stuff more than people.
Well, I guess the question then is how I hate to use the word fearful, but how aware do we need to be then about the existence of bed bugs when going from place to place, especially, if you're in an area in which there are homes that are tightly packed together, you're in and out. Do we really need to be concerned about bringing them back to perhaps our place, which might not have them at the moment?
Live your life.
Live your life.
It's not fun to have them, but there are some precautions you can take and make it less likely that you'd bring them home. Don't carry tons of stuff around with you everywhere. Don't throw that stuff on people's beds when you go visit their house. Do your laundry regularly. Check the bed at the hotel. There are things you can do.
And don't blame yourself and your travel for infestation that might happen years after you moved into a house, because it could have been from that house had bed bugs before you moved in there.
If there is an infestation, step one is what?
Get help.
Call a professional.
Don't panic. Go to your state university extension. So Penn State has lots of information to help you. Don't panic. Don't do anything crazy.
Don't try to superheat your apartment, but truly just get some practical advice. Penn State Extension is not going to cost you anything.
Right.
If you're going to call for advice, at least to get started. Do we need to tell folks who might be visiting us? At what point do you press go there? Because there's a reluctance. There is the stigma, and people do have, as we mentioned at the start of the show, that visceral reaction even to the word bed bug. Brooke?
I think that disclosing it is probably the better thing to do. Yes, there is a stigma, but talking about it is what is going to get rid of that stigma, which is partly why I wrote a book and continue to tell people I've had bed bugs three times. I think education and letting people know, yes, I have bed bugs, but it's very unlikely you're going to get them. I think that's one way to sort of educate people about them. On the flip side of that, though, they can be very socially isolating, and some people still, even if they know how bed bugs function and know that, they're not likely to get them just by dropping by a friend's house who has them, the social stigma still is real, and that isolation can be really real as well. So
we've got a call from Linda who says, a friend of mine has bed bugs in Baltimore County. He had a professional come in and do a heat treatment 6 months ago. Then the bed bugs came back 2 months later, and they've done more treatments, but they are still coming back. Are there any suggestions on what to do? So when you have an infestation that just does not, you can't seem to get rid of it, Do you just change professionals, try a different track?
I'd be curious if this person lives in an apartment building versus a standalone home. Mm-hmm. The heat treatment can work quite well, but if you are getting that done and you have an apartment and no one else is getting treated or checked, then it's probably going to be kind of useless, because if your neighbor has bed bugs, they're just going to perhaps keep coming into your unit. If it's a standalone house and that's not working, I guess maybe hiring someone else and trying other tactics.
And again, if you happen to be in a situation in which you have a landlord, Michael Levy, then it comes down to tenants' rights, disclosure policies, And if there isn't anything in place, perhaps going to your local elected representative.
Sure. I hope everyone can get behind this bill because we need a policy.
Mark Squilla's bill.
Mark Squilla's bill, absolutely. And I'll just say, it can't be done individually. And before DDT, we treated bedbugs with hydrogen cyanide gas.
Right.
Tell us a little bit about that. That just sounds absolutely deadly.
It was absolutely deadly.
People would wear gas masks when they were applying it, yeah.
And they didn't do it in one apartment, right? The whole building came out, and they went in and treated building by building and neighboring buildings. There were accidents. I'm not saying we should go back to hydrogen cyanide gas, but we have to go back to that doing it as a community. We can't just be treating one house, one apartment, and expect the problem to go away.
What period of time was that in our country's history?
That would have been pre-war up until DDT came onto the market right after World War II.
Okay, so early 20th century.
Yes.
You're saying. So you talk about acting as a community, but again, as Philadelphia City Councilman Mark Squilla had said earlier, it just seems to be low on the priority, at least of Philadelphia City government. And granted, there are an awful lot of things that the government officials have to contend with, some real emergencies in the city, the homicide rate and et cetera. But it is one of those hidden health issues then? Is that a good way to put it, or just kind of flies under the radar?
Sure, and I'll say it may be low on the priority of parts of the government, but I think it's high on the priority of about 10% of Philadelphians.
Yeah. So what do you find? You live in New York City, Brooke?
Yes, I do. I'm in Brooklyn.
So how has New York handled this issue?
Well, as far as the disclosures go, I think that's really interesting, the Philadelphia's sort of tactic there. We do have disclosures right now that we didn't used to have, where I believe both the landlord and tenants have to disclose when you're signing a lease whether you've had bedbugs in the unit or if you're the renter in your past unit within the last year. It's a rider that appears on leases. I think it's kind of hard to measure how bad bedbugs are in any given city. Even this Terminex study that we're talking about, quote-unquote study, I don't even know if calling it a study is quite right because, to my knowledge, they are actually going out and just looking at the number of cases they have had at their company in these cities, right? So Philly might not even be number one in that regard because there are a lot of other companies out there. There are a lot of bedbug cases that don't, have an exterminator or a big company attached to them, that kind of thing. So in New York, they've tried to measure sort of the ups and downs of bedbugs in one way by looking at 311 calls, so calls to the city complaining about bedbugs, and that has been down in recent years, and that has been one thing that people have pointed to, like, oh, it's not as bad now as it was. I don't think that's necessarily the best measure. I think that it's probably just as bad, but people are not panicking and calling 311. They're calling an exterminator or getting, at some point the bedbugs are so common that it's sort of like you wouldn't call 311 if you have roaches or something like this as well, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Well, why don't we wrap up the hour by talking about do's and don'ts? So if you want to prevent, a collection of bedbugs in your home, what are some do's? What do you need to do, Michael?
Check your mattress regularly and change your sheets regularly and launder regularly. I think that's the number one do in terms of preventing. I don't think you should try to prevent them from entering your house in these random ways that they can do. You just want to make sure that they don't get established.
And Brooke, some don'ts?
Some don'ts. Again, don't panic. Don't panic. Yeah. Live your life. I think that, sometimes I'll see stories like, oh, we shouldn't be taking books out of the library. We shouldn't be doing this or that because a bedbug was found at the public library. I think that you just need to live your life and, yes, take the precautions, but don't panic.
And don't be afraid to talk about it if it's something that does affect you.
Absolutely.
All right. Brooke Burrell, a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
Brooke Burrell is author of Infested, How the Bedbug Infiltrated Our Bedrooms and Took Over the World. And Michael Levy, our thanks to you as well.
Thank you very much.
Michael Levy is Associate Professor of Epidemiology at the University of Pennsylvania. Don't forget to follow us on social media and check out our podcasts. Simply head to whyy.org/radiotimes. Our engineer today has been Al Banks. Our producer is Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Kelsey Hansen. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan. Thanks for listening to Radio Times.